Today, we are talking Knock.
What's going on, everybody? Welcome to another episode of Talkin' Knock. I am your host, Tristan, joined by my co-host, Peyton. How you doing today, Peyton?
Oh, you know, same as last time, just here and ready to talk about some RPGs.
Gotcha. So, like, I've been reading a bunch of Dying Earth lately, and it got me thinking. So in Dying Earth, all of the, you know, magicians have these names like blank the blank. So I was thinking about what ours would be, and mine would very obviously be something, you know, like Tristan the Terrific or something like that. And yours, I was thinking, I think it's going to be Peyton the Pain in My Ass. That kind of seems pretty on brand.
You know, as much as I would like to sit here and disagree with you, I think, unfortunately, that, yeah, that kind of fits me pretty well.
So, before we get into it today, we do have some listener questions, which we'll do at the end, but one of them was a really good point and something that I think we should talk about before we get into any further sessions, and that is what OSR stands for. I actually got this from a few different people who reached out to me and weren't 100% sure, so I thought I'd give a little recap. So, OSR stands for something that is debated by a bunch of people. It's either old school renaissance, old school revival, and basically what it means is taking the old school style of play where you're like dungeon delving, there's less rules, it's all about, you know, it's high death, it's all that kind of stuff, and bringing that into modern play. Now, there's like a few schools of thought on it, schools of thought used very loosely because it's just a bunch of people on the internet arguing semantics. But basically, it's what I like to use it for and what I will be using it for when we talk about this is taking those old school ideas of having less skills, having it more based on character development through experience rather than like writing a whole long backstory or anything like that, and having that high risk, not necessarily high death rate, but high risk in that your actions actually have consequences rather than just, you know, oh, I'm going to go fight that thing and five rounds of combat later I won even though I'm level one. But yeah, we got asked that a few times, so I figured I'd go right at the beginning of the episode with that, especially based on the two articles that we're reading today from Knock. Second housekeeping thing is the state of our art. Howdy, Tristan from the future here, just tuning in to say that the information I was about to give about our art was incorrect, because in between us recording this episode and putting it out there, LFOSR did actually finish our art, and you can view it easily now on any of our podcasting websites. It was awesome working with him. He was fantastic. He gave us this great, like, gruesome, gross, but really cool art, and we're more than happy to recommend him to anybody, and his link to his website is going to be in the description of this podcast. But now back to the episode, everybody. But yeah, after all of that's done, what have you been doing in gaming? Have you gotten a chance to have your fifth edition game lately?
Yeah, so we had it last Wednesday, because we usually have it every Wednesday because it works, because it's after our DCC on Tuesday, you know. And recently I haven't been able to do a lot of, like, I guess you would say, prep work. So I've kind of been pulling, you know, like, hey, this from this module, and kind of like hodgepodging it into like a singular dungeon. And the last few sessions have basically just been delving through that and having a bunch of fun and getting through all the treasure rooms and piecing together what goes where. And because, like, two of my players are new, so this is like their first, like, serious big dungeon grind.
Well, that's fun. Yeah, I mean, we obviously just finished our DCC session, because that's normally when we record these things, and it was a strange one this week. We had one of our characters turn into a cat person. You, for an elf, became fat and also lost some strength because your body's not made to deal with that. And then our beloved character Kimbra made his skin turn red. So all around, a lot of interesting side effects today. But what we're talking about today are two articles from Knock Issue 1. Knock, again, is compiled by Olivier Revenue and Eric Nyden. It's a compilation of a bunch of different OSR materials and stuff like that. And the two that we're looking at today are What I Want in an OSR Game by Brooks Daly, and A Comparison of Old and New D&D by Gavin Norman. So what we're going to do today is, because these are longer articles and they have subheadings, we're kind of going to go through the subheadings and talk about what we like and our opinions on each of them as we go through. Obviously, we'll still talk about the art and everything like that, but these are both more opinion-based pieces, so it makes more sense for us to talk about our opinions rather than if we're going to use them in our games and everything like that, because they're a little bit more theory-based. So first things first, Brooks Daly's article, which is What I Want in an OSR Game. You can find more from him at swordsandscoundrel.blogspot.com. And the art piece, which is kind of cool. I actually really like the art piece for this one. What did you think of it?
I loved it. I don't really know what it is, but I guess that kind of captures the whole adventurous aspect of D&D. But yeah.
I'm pretty sure it's supposed to be a gibbering mouther from early editions, which is this gross, like, amalgamation of mouths and eyes and stuff. That's at least what it reminded me of, but it could just be something, some random creature that Michael Shepard did the art that he decided to make. Unfortunately, I was unable to find anything about Michael Shepard online. He doesn't have any contact info in the credits page of Nock, and I just was unable to find anything about him. But if you know anything about him, feel free to email us at talkin.nock@gmail.com. There is no G at the end of talkin. But yeah, so like we said, this is all opinion-based from them. And the first one is Brooks talking about what he likes in OSR games and how and why they give him a specific appeal. So his first subtopic is having objective challenge-based gaming. What did you think of this section, Peyton?
So my opinions on this section kind of, you know, go into my opinions on this article as a whole, just because it's the intro, subheader, and whatnot. I kind of agree with wanting the objective challenge-based gameplay. However, I guess for me personally, I feel like the reasons as to why are different.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think I'm pretty much in the same boat. Basically, what he's saying is you're playing games like Burning Wheel, Apocalypse World, and other kind of narrative-based games. You're playing those to see what happens, whereas in OSR games, you're playing to succeed. You're trying to defeat enemies, you're trying to get treasure and all of that. And to a point, I agree. What are your thoughts on it?
Well, my thoughts are, I guess, from like a very surface level perspective, like I said, I very much agree with wanting objective challenge-based gameplay. I just feel like he kind of approaches it more from the perspective that it allows him to kind of zone out from the whole shifting meta-narrative around a campaign. Which, don't get me wrong, it's a completely valid way to do it.
Yeah.
It's just, the reason I love OSR is because of this objective challenge-based mindset where you don't have a lot of skills or a lot of rules or like niche mechanics. It gives you the creativity to make an even better meta-shifting narrative around the campaign.
Yeah, exactly. I really enjoy the way that we have been building our campaign world is going from adventure to adventure. And yes, we're having like high action, everything like that. But we also have a subplot of what's going on with our characters, and I think that really adds to the experience overall, instead of it just because if it was just a bunch of dungeon crawls, I feel like we kind of get bored because it's like, all right, whatever. But our characters are individual people. We've all talked, well, all of you have talked to me rather about what their goals are and what they want end game. And so it's made that a lot more meaningful to go through those dungeons. So I'm right there with you. I think I totally agree with you. His second subheading is encounter-based high adventure. So basically what he's talking about is it's going from one, I guess we kind of already talked about this, but it's going from one set of action to the next set of action, going through exotic locales, fighting thrilling heroics and a lot of weird shit, as he says, and that it brings out a completely different creative output. And like we said, we both agree with that. I think that having our characters as our way into these game worlds is really cool, but I think it's better when we're actually able to develop those characters, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, absolutely. I just feel like I understand, like he specifically mentions here in a passage, like, you know, not wanting to play Game of Thrones all the time. And that's completely fair, but you can have these character stories that aren't like these deep Game of Thrones level stuff without also having to go to the extreme opposite of just zoning out and pretending they're not there.
Yeah, exactly. And he even goes into one part where he's like, you don't need to worry about how the PC's deep-seated philosophical issues will come into play. They'll come for the treasure anyway. And yes, but I also like to give them, as a judge or GM or DM, whatever you want to call the person running the game, referee, I also like to give them a personal reason for going in as well. We're still dealing with all the same OSR issues, but we're doing them with some personal flair as well, if that makes sense.
Yeah, just kind of foreshadowing here. In a future subheading, he brings up the concept of like risk management. And this kind of ties into it in that while risk management is a good thing to have in your game, I feel like character narratives and at least some form of like at least like small narrative allows for rather lopsided risk versus reward, you know, like that kind of stuff, which in the end leads to more like interesting encounters.
Yeah, agreed, because you have to, there's no risk if you don't actually have something you want to risk. Yeah, you can amass a lot of gold and that's fantastic in a game setting, but actually having something that you're building for, like for instance on our latest story where people from the town that you guys all knew were kidnapped, that's a very good way to get people to want to go, hey, we got to get them back. There's a risk versus reward there, because if we don't do it right now, they could die. This next subheading is probably the one that I agree with almost to a T. It's oracular dice and impartial abjurator. So basically what that's saying is, hey, use random tables. Hey, be impartial the whole time. And I think I completely agree with that. Randomness and objectiveness is another way to summarize it. And I agree on both, but I don't like how he talks about it being solely based on random encounters. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's kind of like how, I guess this is kind of like a greater game design kind of thing rather than just specific to tabletops. However, it seems to have been found that like the most, I guess I should say the greatest narratives told in a game are ones where it's kind of like a chain link fence. You know, you can go off and do whatever you want with the randomness. However, you still get shoehorned into like one, two, or three or four important story-based encounters that shift the story going, and then you break off into randomness again.
Yeah, exactly. And that's, I don't know if you've noticed, but in our story, that's currently what is happening in our campaign setting where, yes, you have been doing these things, you've been doing what you want. There are still these events that will tie you into a cohesive storyline to move you guys all forward as a group, rather than it just being like, all right, well, what should we do this week? And don't get me wrong, there's nothing wrong with that if that's how you want to run our game. It's just, like I said, this is an opinion piece, so obviously we're talking about our own opinions. I did really like his line where he said, their success and failure, talking about the players, is all between them and the dice gods, and I am but a messenger. And I totally agree with that. When I first started running stuff, I fudged rolls because I was really worried about like my characters dying and you guys getting upset. And then I got really into OSR and I was like, screw it. The dice say what the dice say and we'll see what happens.
Yeah, it's kind of gone away now. However, back in like the 80s and 90s, when D&D was being portrayed in popular culture, it kind of portrayed the DM as like this evil figure trying to kill the players. And I agree with the take here that, like, no, that isn't the case at all. You're just the messenger. You're just the narrative. You're just the storyteller. Like, what happens, happens. And it's not because the GM should have any really big bias in there.
Yeah, I agree. And that's why I really like even just the changing of the vernacular from Dungeon Master or Game Master to Referee, Judge, Keeper of Secrets for Call of Cthulhu. All of those are fantastic because it's less, this is my game, you're playing in my game. And it's more, hey, we're playing this together. I just know these rules. I'm just enforcing those rules. Anything else? Let's just make a story together kind of thing.
Yeah. When I'm playing my 5e game, one of my players has played 5e before. However, they've really only played public games. She'll always ask, you know, hey, can I do this? Can I do that? Is it okay if I go here? Is it okay if I do this? And, you know, from a public perspective, you may have to sit there and flip through the rules and make sure it's fair to everyone involved. But since we're all friends, you know, I can just say, you know, just do it. You know, like if you can think of a way, just go do it. It's fine.
Exactly. And I do not have any idea what every single rule in any system is. Doesn't matter what system I've been playing for years, I'm not going to remember all of those rules. So a lot of times I'll just say yes on the fly or no on the fly. And it's like, this is what we're doing in this situation. I'll look back after the session is over and we'll move from there. Because I don't want to spend a bunch of time looking through a rule book. And that's part of the reason why I like OSR games, because most of them are normally rules light or have something very intuitive. I know DCC isn't technically fully OSR, but it's OSR inspired. And the dice chain, like, when in doubt, just move up or down the dice chain.
Yeah, either the dice chain or like an advantage or disadvantage mechanic and other rule systems. But like there's so many things in play that allow you to kind of improv as you go along. And I feel like this idea of constantly having to look up if this is okay kind of is like an antithesis to that.
Exactly, yeah. Our next subheading related to that is player skill and fictional engagement. So in this subheading, he's talking about skill-based systems like Pathfinder or something, where there is a skill for every single thing that you will do in the game, and you have to look up what that skill is every step of the way. And how OSR games kind of handle that by, for in DCC's case, just because I'm most familiar with it, they have your profession. And it's like, if your profession relates to it, sure, go for it. Old School Essentials has something similar. Basically any BX clone or hack or anything like that has something where it's just, hey, see if you can do it. Don't waste time looking up if you have a skill that specifically relates to this. It's just going to bog you down. You're going to spend way more time looking up rules than you are actually playing the game. And I agree completely.
I agree to a point. However, I would like to bring up a counter example that plays against this.
Oh no, are we going to throw hands right now?
We're definitely going to throw hands. No, it's just like when we're playing, or I guess not we, but when someone is playing an OSR related game and they say, I want to do X, you know, usually the judge will still make them roll one of their base attributes.
Yes, yeah.
In D&D and Pathfinder and all of this stuff, it isn't like these skills are like specifically chosen for your class or your backstory or anything. I mean, like their proficiencies are, however, they're still governed and grounded within your core stats. So if you want to introduce a way for, say, for example, a rather niche idea for a character class to work, where they need to, say, for example, be able to use some of the stuff that acrobatics, or I guess agility does, but also completely disregard another half of it, you wouldn't be able to do that in an OSR-related game.
That's fair. I think more what his point is, I definitely get what you're saying, and I think I agree. I think more what he's saying is that you are, or she, I'm not 100% sure if Brooks is a man or a woman, so I'm very sorry if I misgendered you, but I think what they're saying is that when you have skills and you have specific things that the skills relate to, you are less likely to think outside of those skills. So again, using DCC, Mighty Deeds, where a lot of other games will have something like, okay, here's what you do for tripping, here's what you do for grappling, here's what you do for this, here's what you do for that. And for DCC, it's like, hey, that's a mighty deed. Anything you're doing there, mighty deed. Do a mighty deed. Come on, man. You just roll one dice and you think about the coolest thing that you could possibly do and you come to that agreement with your judge and then bam, you do it. And I think that's more what he's leaning into rather than, hey, not having skills is a good thing. I think he just wants more generalized and mind-opening ways of dealing with skills.
I can definitely see how that would be the case. And I gotta say, I mostly agree. I feel like it may be a little intimidating for people just coming into DCC to deal with that. But so long as they have a good party and give it a few sessions, they should be fine.
Yeah, and I mean, just having RPG experience in general, like that's why I'm never going to trash talk 5th edition, because I'm going to be honest, 5th edition is fantastic for getting people into this hobby. It's something that's easy to pick up. It's got name recognition. It's got skills. It's not super complex. And sitting down with someone and being like, hey, do you want to play Dungeons and Dragons? That thing that you saw on Stranger Things is a lot easier than me saying, hey, do you want to play Old School Essentials? And then having to explain what Old School Essentials is old school of, and then how that relates to what modern design structures are and all of that. It's just easier to get someone with their toes wet into, it's like the gateway drug of RPGs. You get people in and then you shove them on the harder stuff where you know they're going to have a good time.
Yeah, makes sense to me. It sounds, I mean, it's how I got into D&D, or I guess tabletop games and now OSR related stuff, but that was my pipeline, so yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So the last subheading he has for this article is, or they have rather, is Adventure as Expedition. So this is mainly about resource management in a fun way, not resource management with like the tedious parts of it, but I actually tried to pull this in today in our session. I don't know if you noticed, but after reading this, I was like, yeah, I want to use that more. I'd like that to be something that people have to worry about. So these items that are on everybody's character sheets actually get used instead of just hand waved away and, oh, hey, that torch lasted the entire time you were in this dungeon.
Yeah, I kind of feel like this plays into like a greater conversation around what difficult is. And most of the time it comes down to, you know, challenging versus punishing. And if you just have a system where all of the stuff in your inventory is like an arbitrary checklist, then that's not challenging. That's just punishing if you don't have it. And it's not fun.
Yeah, I agree with that.
But I was going to say, if you take it from the perspective that the author is, or you did during our DCC game tonight, where it gives everything like a functional use that helps us in the dungeon, but also is something that, you know, we interact with and isn't just a character buff, makes that a whole lot more fun.
Yeah, and if you're going to use something like this, like resource management of, be it food, water, torches is the big thing that I use today, or light sources in general, you've got to have a way for people to get more of them somewhere in there. Don't make it easy for them and have, like, every other room have more torches or something in it. But, hey, every 10 rooms or something, yeah, you find candles, in our case. Something that's weak, but there's obviously something better, like a torch or a lantern or something like that. But, hey, these candles will do. It's enough to keep me out of the dark. It's enough to keep me seeing what's going on without punishing me way too much.
Yeah, and kind of tying into a previous header about, you know, bringing up the randomness of OSR games, you can make it so that you don't have to say, like, this stuff is set in this room. Like, you can just say, oh, I want to use this when the party is running out of supplies, if that makes sense.
Yeah, no, totally, I get you.
And it's a good way to, like, I guess you could say, make like an adaptive difficulty in the campaign.
Yeah, I definitely agree. I think overall, this was a really useful article, even if we didn't necessarily agree with all of the opinions, because it got us thinking about those opinions. Like, I think that's the whole point of an opinion piece, is to get the reader to reflect on what they think and if they agree or disagree. It wasn't something over the top where I was like, this is stupid, I hate this. It was more like, huh, yeah, I can see where they're coming from, but this kind of helped me hone in on my own beliefs on it. I don't know about you.
Yeah, it kind of allowed me to see from a different perspective, because I mostly play in a private setting with friends. And I can tell that at least like the early part of Nock is written from the perspective of people who have done more public games, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I definitely get you. I get what you're saying. It's a very different landscape to be playing in.
Yeah, so from the perspective of being inside that landscape, I totally agree 100% with everything that article had to say. I just feel like there are other opportunities out there that can alleviate some of the gripes he has.
Yeah, I would agree with that. The second article we're looking at is by Gavin Norman, who I'm sure you know, but he wrote OSE, Old School Essentials. You can find him on www.necroticgnome.com, or if you're looking for his stuff in the U.S., he and Exalted Funeral have now merged their, I guess, publishing companies, you could call them. So now in the U.S., you can go to www.exaltedfuneral.com. I actually just got all of my Old School Essentials Advanced stuff. I'm just waiting on two books in the mail, but I got the rest of it, and it's excellent. I love it. And we played a session or two of OSE as well, and it was a good time.
Yeah, I feel like I would have liked it more if we played more of a campaign setting. But for the one-off we had, it was fun.
Yeah, and also if we had more of a consistent group for that, that was kind of a pain dealing with all of it.
Yeah, having to juggle like, what, 5, 6, 7 people was not fun.
Yeah, it was definitely a lot. Also, the art is by Matthew Houston, who is another one of these artists that I can find nothing about. And I'm sorry, Matthew, but your name is just generic enough that there are a lot of you on Google, and I was unable to find your specific one. So feel free to yell at me over email and let me know what you have, and I will put it in the description. And that goes for Michael Shepard as well. But this one is a little bit more, what's the word? Like, it's a little bit more nitty-gritty about specifically what he's talking about instead of, like, vague ideas.
Yeah, he touches a bit on like the culture issue that the first one did, but I feel like this one also gets a lot more into the mechanical side of things rather than just high tier opinion ideas.
Exactly. He starts out basically talking about his experience with RPGs, both in old school, a little bit on new. He kind of dropped off around D&D 4th edition and then tried out 3rd edition and Pathfinder, which, I started in 4th edition and that was a rough time, let me tell you that. If you enjoy WoW, you would enjoy 4th edition, but it is the only edition of this game that I do not see any benefits of. He goes on to talk from there, and he talks about what things from the system of OSR games that he likes and why he thinks that he likes them. Again, this is another opinion piece, so we're going to be talking about it with our opinions as well. He kind of does subheadings. It's more him listing out the things that he likes and then explaining more about on him. So the first one of those being, this is not a game of rules. He's talking about how it's very rules-light systems. It's much more immersive and mysterious if players are thinking of being their character rather than what they're allowed to do in the rules. And I think this goes back to the skill thing that I was talking about a little bit with you, Peyton. I didn't know if you had any opinions on this as well.
You have to remind me, what skill thing?
Basically, how the skill set and having to look up what each skill can do limits a character a little bit, rather than just saying, hey, what does your character want to do, not what skill is your character taking advantage of?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I agree with that wholeheartedly. I also feel from a more roleplay perspective that, you know, if you're constantly having to either pull out a physical book to look out a rule, or you have to sit here and go to another screen and Google something on, like, you know, Beyond Roll 20 or something, whatever. Since you're not sitting there thinking in character, it feeds into the whole you're not thinking in character
thing. Yeah, I agree.
From like a literal outside perspective.
Exactly. Also, rulings are better than rules is the golden rule of RPGs, and I want to have that engraved on my tombstone one day, because that is the perfect thing. Having things where you say, hey, this is what I would do in this situation, not this is a hard rule and if you break this, you're gonna go to hell. Like, it's much better to have that rulings kind of attitude about it all.
I 100% agree. And I gotta say, this is the one thing that I wish that Adventure 5e D&D would implement as well, in that sometimes stuff just isn't going to go according to plan, and just make a ruling on the spot, do whatever, just flow with it instead of causing a big hassle and rules lawyer everything.
Yes, exactly. The second one he talks about is improvisation. This one, he talked about how improv is so great, and I totally agree with that. I just don't necessarily see that as something that is solely in OSR games.
Yeah, I had almost the same opinion. I agree wholeheartedly with what he is saying, but like you said, I feel like, for example, if you were to apply theater of the mind to almost any mindset, it would lead to more improvisation, which is what the author is trying to get at. Now, I realize that some people don't like theater of the mind, and it's not really something that you can do in a public setting, but still, I feel like there are tools out there to help spice up stuff that aren't specific to OSE.
It's theater of the mind is something that we switched to probably about a year ago, and I have never looked back, honestly. I think that it's so much better for combat. I think it's less stress. There's less of this, not strategy in a negative sense, but strategy with a capital S, where you are worried about getting the flanking bonus and making sure that you're next to your opponent in this way and that way with miniatures. And that's just not for me. You play a thief. I'm very laissez-faire about when you get your backstab bonus, because I'm like, can you realistically get behind him? Sure, then yes, you can use your backstab bonus. I'm not going to make you measure out your feet and do all of that stuff.
Yeah, it also leads to situations where even in new D&D rule sets, players doing a theater of the mind like run like that, they start to think, I guess what I would say, in the third dimension.
Yes.
And that it isn't just like a top down, like this tile is this tile is this, but can I climb the statue? You know, can I go hide on this shelf? That kind of stuff.
Can I throw a grappling hook to grab this ogre through this hole and bring it back down with me?
Exactly. It's just that kind of stuff you just would not get even in an OSR game if you were using miniatures or, say, for example, a tile set on Roll20 or Fantasy Grounds.
That's what I prefer, Theater of the Mind. I totally get why people want to be using miniatures and battle maps and stuff. And battle maps are really pretty. I love looking at battle maps. I just don't want to use them for my own game. I think this next subheading is both of our favorites. So I'll let you go ahead and explain this one a little bit, and because I know you have a ton of thoughts on this.
All right. So the subheading is called Growing Characters versus Character Builds. And basically what he is going into here is the differing school of thoughts between old D&D and new D&D, in that old D&D, most of the character progression is done in campaign growth, while in new D&D, it feels like a surprisingly large majority of your progression is done before you even make the character.
Yeah.
And like you said, that I really agree with the whole progressing a character organically through the campaign.
Yeah, I think after we switched to using funnels, or I basically was like, do not give me more than a small paragraph about your character, because I think it means more for the characters. I think it means more for the players in general and their attachment to those characters if everything that is going on with those characters is happening in game. We played through it. It was us. Like, it was our group doing that together. And I think that having someone, and I don't get me wrong, I know that people love writing long backstories, and that's totally great, just not for us. Like I said, this is our opinions. I think it's much better, instead of me getting like a 4-page backstory about someone's character and about all the stuff they did when they're level one and they've never really been outside their city realistically, I think it's much better when we make those stories together. And I think that people end up loving their characters and getting closer with their group through that, if that makes sense.
One thing I'd like to add on to that is, due to the nature of new D&D, where you build such like a strong foundation for a character, and obviously some people are going to like, they think that this is a bonus, but I personally feel that this leads to, yeah, it'll lead to a more refined experience, but it's still rather restrictive in what you can do, because you can only go so far outside the bounds of your foundation.
Yes, yeah.
Whereas with this more organic character growth, it allows for, I guess I would say, characters to more easily get out of their, I get in character, get out of their, what'd you call it?
Specifics.
Comfort
zone.
Yeah,
comfort zone. Yeah, that works.
Comfort zone's the word, yeah. It allows characters to get out of their comfort zone more easily, and a metaphor I like to use is that, like, it's making a novel with an outline versus making a novel with a basic idea.
Yeah.
Like, not sure. Fuck, you can cut this out. Anyway. Yeah. If you go into a situation with an outline, you know, you're not going to think, can I do this, 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 and this? Because you're going to think, oh, would this be aligned with my character? Would my one specific minutia backstory stop me from acting with this? Well, in OSR-related games, where it's literally just an idea, like, you can still have those kind of things crop up. However, it would have been in a situation where the party was doing stuff, so therefore they would understand it too and be more sympathetic, instead of it just being, you know, lawful paladin versus chaotic rogue.
Yeah, I totally agree. And I'm going to need to get you on record saying this so I can rub it in all of my English teachers' faces when I said I never wanted to write an outline. But that's neither here nor there.
I don't think that'd be the best idea, but I'll let you go for it.
Also, the next, we kind of already touched on the next one. It's less is more, which is basically saying, hey, less rules are better. It gives more freedom to the characters. And I think we've kind of drilled that nail in at this point. The next two, I kind of limped. Oh my God. I kind of looped together. So it's saying yes and saying no. And saying yes is basically talking about, can you realistically do this? And saying no is, can you realistically not do this? And it's kind of all common sense based. And I really don't have anything to say here. It's pretty self-explanatory, and I pretty much agree with it, unless you had anything.
Well, I do have something. However, it's more related to the gripes with intricacies in rule sets rather than the general point he's trying to get across.
Gotcha.
I understand where he's coming from, and in 99% of circumstances, I wholeheartedly agree. I just feel like there are some clunky mechanics, and I might get burnt steak for this, but there are some clunky mechanics in some OSR-related games that mean that if you want to do a rather mundane thing, you still need to rely on the RNG of the dice, which kind of takes out of the whole saying yes mindset, because it instead puts you in the mindset of, is this even worth it if I have to rely on the dice, which is the kind of mindset that he's trying to pull people away from.
Yeah, I get that. I think basically it's kind of like how in earlier editions of D&D, the percentages for a thief to do like a lot of the things that thieves do were like really, really low. Is that kind of what you're getting at?
Yeah, that kind of stuff. But just as another example, I haven't played every single OSR related game, but in a lot of the rule sets that I've at least looked at, even the most basic of spells still require you to get usually a roll that would be above your average at level one.
Oh, yeah.
Which is fine for really powerful spells. However, if you're like a wizard and you want to snap your finger and light a candle, you shouldn't have to sit there and think, okay, will I be able to roll a DC 12 when my average is 10?
Yeah, cantrips definitely helped out with that later on. I definitely agree with what you're saying on that front.
Yeah. Cantrips and that kind of stuff, you know, like I said before, make it burned at the stake. I'd be happier if they were in some rule sets.
So his last two are making the game your own, which is just really, really small, which is basically saying when you have an official rule book, it can bog you down a little bit and kind of be intimidating. I find more using campaign settings to be intimidating rather than rule books. I get what he's saying. I think that having a very thick rulebook can be intimidating. Then again, I played DCC, which is like a 500-page rulebook, even though the rules are only like 50 pages of it, and the rest of it is just spells. I get what he's saying. I think I mainly agree with him. I think I'm more worried about campaign settings where, especially campaign settings like Forgotten Realms, for instance. I am terrified of running Forgotten Realms outside of anybody who I know for a fact has not played or read any of the Forgotten Realms books, because there is so much lore and crap that I just do not have a handle of, but what do you think of that?
When it comes to the setting argument, I 100% agree in that most of any frustration is most likely going to come from the module rather than the rule set. I going back a bit, he talks about, like you said, he likes how the lack of rules can be less intimidating to a DM.
Yeah.
And I would just like to say that maybe this is more of a different strokes for different folks kind of thing. Because speaking not only from a personal perspective, but also from the perspective of a few friends that don't really play tabletop games at all, having a very firm and solid rule set can be a blessing sometimes. Because if you fly by the seat of your pants, you can very easily set up multiple things early on that will come back to bite your ass big down the line.
Oh yeah, for sure. And even just getting yourself into the groove of doing something that just is not healthy for your table and will eventually unravel your group. I definitely got into that when I first started running games. And I think a lot of times these two who have written both of these articles are obviously very experienced runners of games and everything like that. And I think sometimes it's just hard to remember, hey, when I was brand new, having more was kind of better for me. And in some cases, it might not have been. Sometimes you might have flown by the seat of your pants and done great. But personally, I would prefer to have more when I first started and then realize, hey, I prefer these more rules-like games rather than have it be the other way around and be like, I feel like I'm drowning. I don't want to run this. This is a lot of work on me kind of thing and deal with all of that.
Yeah, and that kind of plays into your earlier point of maybe a more rule-specific, you know, GM or judge book would be better for someone who is just coming in and learning how to, you know, DM a game, but then they would quickly move off to something more OSR related.
Yeah, for sure. And his last one is rules where necessary, which I think is kind of a little bit related to what we're talking about. But basically, he's saying that starting from a rules light system is better because you can add on to it a lot easier than take away from it. And I definitely do agree, especially because I was running Pathfinder for a while. And I think Pathfinder is awesome. I think Paizo is a great company that handles stuff really well. But that is a very, very, very crunchy rule set with a lot of different numbers for a lot of different things, to the point where I felt like we spent a lot of our sessions having to look back. Then again, we were playing with some people who were not necessarily the most cognizant of the rest of the group, so I feel like that may have played more into it. But I definitely think it would be easier to deal with those players if I was working with a less rule-heavy system and I wasn't getting rule-lawyered all the time.
I agree to a point. However, as bad as this may sound, like you said, they didn't really mesh well. They were just kind of randoms we picked up for the session. If they were being rules lawyer, I mean, like, yeah, sure, that's also kind of tied to the system, but also you could have just kicked them out.
Yeah. And I think that's something that people need to realize for a lot of their games is if you are ever, this is something that I see on Reddit, on Discords that I'm in, basically everywhere where people are asking how they deal with problem players, and be reasonable to an extent. Talk to the person, try and figure something out with them. But at a certain point, you are not in the wrong for moving on from that group. It took me a long time to realize that. And once I did, this session and these people that I'm playing with right now, best group I've played with yet. And it's because I realized, hey, I don't want to waste my time running games for people who aren't going to enjoy it, who are going to bitch about one thing or another. Like, this is a hobby for me, and it's a hobby for the rest of you people. So if you feel like you're not enjoying who you're playing with, stop playing with them. If they're people you hang out with, like, regularly, you've got to kind of make the call of saying, hey, I don't want to do this anymore, or you can figure out some way to get yourself out of it. And if you need to play with people online, the online community right now, especially after COVID-19, is very robust, and there are so many resources for you. So please, if you ever need advice on how to get out of a group that you don't want to play with anymore, you are welcome to send us an email as well, and I will give you advice specifically on how to deal with that.
Yeah, and just adding on to that, I feel like D&D and it's many offshoots. The hobby around it is kind of a very heavy one that you get very, very engrossed in really quick. And that can kind of lead to this feeling of an almost obligation to keep doing what you're doing, if that makes sense. Just because, like, it's your hobby. It's like, what else are you going to do? Like, it's just okay to step back sometimes, realize, oh yeah, this is just a tabletop game. I'm not having fun, either because of this person or because of this rule set or whatever, and just take a step back, remove the person, or you be removed if that needs to happen. But, like, just don't feel forced to do anything just because you like doing it because it's your hobby.
Yeah, for sure. So I guess now we'll move on to our listener questions. We only got one today. You are free to send them in to talkin.knock@gmail.com. Remember, there's no G at the end of talkin, but our main question is, how much of Nox material can be used for modern games, be it Pathfinder or 5th edition or anything like that? Honestly, any of it. The only thing that you really couldn't, I take that back, maybe not any of it. The only thing that you really couldn't is later on, there are some classes that are specifically for BX hacks or OSE or anything like that. Those are really the only thing that I don't think that you could use. Anything else, the monsters are normally something that's pretty easy to find something equivalent to in your system. So if you need to, you can. And most of these other articles that we're going through are just general advice on how to run the game. So yeah, you can run that in whatever you want. I'm sure that Peyton here is going to pick up some stuff for his 5th edition game that he runs with his family and friends.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So that was our main question. I feel like that's a pretty open and shut, we're done kind of thing for our first listener question. But if you've got any more, remember, send them to our email address. And unless you have any final words, Peyton?
Not really. One thing I want to add on to the listener question real quick is that, you know, the old D&D saying of, if you don't have a monster to use, use a bear, right? If a monster in here looks cool, or a class here looks cool, but it's specifically for a rule set that is not really compatible with newer stuff, you can still work it in. It's fine. If you like the concept, you can do it.
You do realize that that is actually an article in here, right?
I'm going to be completely honest. I read these as I need them for the podcast.
Page 144, just use bears. That's something we'll go over in the future, but like Peyton said, just do it.
Accidental foreshadowing is the best foreshadowing.
All right, everybody. We will catch you next week. Have a good one. See you later.
See you later.